Commissioner Fish. Commissioner Fish, to the podium, please. Good afternoon, everybody. We're really glad that you're here. I forgot to do it this morning, so I'll do it again under local law. If you are a registered lobbyist with the city, then you need to declare on whose behalf or on what organization's behalf you are lobbying. Other elected officials are exempt from this because we know who you are. Even if you're not a registered lobbyist, but you are here lobbying on behalf of an organization, could be nonprofit, for-profit, you are speaking for them. When you come to the big table to testify, and we'll be calling up folks to testify, you give us your name and then who you're lobbying for on behalf. You do not have to give us your address. You do not have to give us your telephone number, just your name, and we'll go from there. So, Carla, how are you?
I'm fine.
How was your lunch?
I was very good.
Good. What did you have?
Tuna.
Tuna. Very good. Can you please call the roll?
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman. Leonard.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Adams.
Here. Can you please read the title for our first item?
Item 496, approve the Education Urban Renewal Plan.
And Chair, do you have time to, do you want to come up at the very beginning? You've got a big county to run, or do you want to wait for the presentation? Okay, we'll make sure that you do. We appreciate you being here. So could I have the initial folks please come forward? I'm going to keep my comments pretty brief. I had an opportunity to talk about this over the past 3 years and its formulation. But I'll say this, that this city has a blight on it, and that blight is a educational system that is not producing the kinds of results that we need to produce, and that this education blight is masked by the fact that we recruit very educated folks to the region. But for families that have been here for generations, for poor families, for families of color, we do not succeed. We are not succeeding. Over the past 3.5 years, co-chaired with Chair Kogan, with the active involvement of Portland State University under the presidency of Vin Vibel, we put together a cradle-to-career strategy. And we worked to make this strategy meaningful and to apply it countywide. And the class of 2011, in partnership as well, obviously, with the school districts around the county, the class of 2011 was the first class to go through the initial approach, cradle-to-career approach, and it was the first class, high school graduation class, depending on the school, but I remember I was in Roosevelt High School, had over a 10% graduation rate increase after being flatlined for a very long time. So when we make modest in that case, we on local government continued to make some investments in sun schools, in summer school, in scholarship programs, but our focus isn't just on K through 12. It's also on early childhood, where the governor has taken some great leading steps of reform, and it is also on post-high school, whether that be skilled training or whether that be college, community college, or four-year colleges. We can't wait for the state to figure out a reasonable an adequate funding strategy for education. We can't wait for the state to figure it out for higher education. We've invested roughly, in the last 15 years, the city has invested roughly about $46 million in various projects that have supported the growth of OHSU. And it has yielded tremendous positive response from charitable folks that provide charitable giving, in their ability to compete and achieve grants, and in their ability to attract talent, and to improve their academic offerings. under the leadership of President Ben Vivelle and his team, with much more modest investments on our part. During his tenure, we've seen leaps and bounds improvements in PSU as well, and he'll have a chance to talk about that and why this investment, this positive intervention on behalf of PSU following on our investment in OHSU, is a smart investment in education. So with that, I will turn it over to Director Patrick Quinton from the Portland Development Commission.
Thank you, Mayor Adams. Good afternoon, commissioners. I am Patrick Quinton. I'm the executive director of the Portland Development Commission. I'm joined by President Vin Vivel of Portland State University, and President Vivel and I will present to you the proposal for a new urban renewal area, the education urban renewal area centered on around the PSU campus. So I'll spend a few minutes just doing a quick overview of the proposed district, the kind of basic facts and figures, and then I'll turn it over to President Vivel, and he'll get into really the objectives of the district, what we hope to achieve, and it really does touch on the themes that the mayor just mentioned, but talking about not only PSU's educational objectives, but also talking about the economic impact that such a district could have on the city and the region. So first to the district itself, this is a very focused district in terms of the geography. It would be in terms of size the smallest district that of the districts that we have currently, setting aside our six new neighborhood districts. You will recall, and I think folks in the audience will recall, that we originally began this conversation around a new central city urban renewal area about 3 years ago, and there was talk of a 300-plus acre urban renewal area with extensively drawn urban renewal area. This process has led us to a much more focused proposal, and that's the district that you see. It has a proposed debt limit of $169 million over a 28-year period of time. So the plan would end in 2041. Our projections right now are that there would be another seven-plus years of debt that would need to be paid off after that. That obviously depends on when we issue debt, but there would be that additional tail on the on the life of the district before the tax dollars return to the different taxing jurisdictions. I'm happy to get into any questions that you might have about the boundaries. I know we've briefed each of you, and we've gone through some specific aspects of the district. But I'll just end, before I turn it over to President Vivel, just to talk about the coalition of organizations and institutions that have come together around this district, obviously led by Portland State University. But the city and PDC have been heavily involved. But we do want to recognize that the Portland Public Schools and Multnomah County in particular have been particularly supportive of this. Their involvement has led to very constructive conversations about how the district does benefit their missions, as well as the missions of the city and PSU. And then, as the mayor mentioned, this district does build on the great work that's happening at OHSU and all the investments that the city has already made and other public partners have made in South Waterfront. So we do view this as a district that will have synergies with all the work that's happened on the OHSU campuses. So with that, I will turn it over to President Vivel.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor, Mr. President, commissioners. It's a pleasure to be here. My name is Vin Vivel, President of Portland State University. And what this is really about is providing access to education for Oregonians, for people from the Portland region, and it's about economic development in the region. That's the purpose of Portland State, and the purpose of this education urban renewal area is to make it possible for Portland State to pursue that mission, that twin mission. As you know, we're already a very large university. We already educate 30,000 people, and most of those are from the region. In fact, 66% of our students come from the Tri-County area, and we expect that percentage to continue. We're one of the largest employers in the region, so through that alone, we make major contributions to economic development. And we increasingly conduct a great amount of research that brings innovations to the business community, the not-for-profit sector, the government sector. We, in addition to the growth that we've already had these last 10 years especially, we expect to grow further. Several years ago, we developed a framework plan which looked at the expected population growth in the metropolitan area, and it looked at the state's goal of 40-40-20, having 40% of the population having a bachelor's degree. I'm quite confident that within the next 7 to 10 years, we will grow to 36,000 students, and we expect that over the next 25 years, we will grow to 50,000 students. We had a plan developed to look at how we can accommodate that kind of growth roughly within the proximity of the university, because we are very committed to continuing to be a major engine for Portland and for the downtown. And we can do that with the help of this district. In addition to this role of providing access to a lot of people, we, as I said, focus on economic development. We believe that to be competitive in a global economy, the metropolitan area needs to be more innovative, more creative, more entrepreneurial than any other. And we do that by having a highly educated population. As the mayor said in his earlier remarks, one way that Oregon has really addressed that recently is by importing educated people from elsewhere. I suppose I'm one example of that. another foreigner. but we think that it should be Oregonians and people from the Portland region themselves that have the opportunity to get the education that allows them to be productive, and it then allows the region to attract the kind of businesses that offer high-quality jobs.
May I just inject here that absolutely, two of my Oregonian-born children have been students at PSU and greatly appreciated the opportunity.
Thank you very much. And they were stellar students, I'm told.
I'm sure you heard about it.
That's the only thing that I'll tell you today that isn't 100% true, because I don't know what they were stellar. I'm sure they were, but I don't know that. To focus on this excellence, we have identified three areas where we can really be major contributors. And we've identified them in the broad area of sustainability, which, of course, is a perfect match with what the city and the region already are known for, and it covers everything from economic vitality, environmental sustainability, and social justice. The area of health and life sciences, where our partnership with OHSU is most important, and that takes form both in the collaborative life sciences building and the development of future labs, of joint appointments, and hopefully the creation of a new school of public health. And in the cradle to career work, the research that we do on a broad range of our disciplines and fields to make sure that the whole education pipeline in this region is as effective as possible. We grew our research by 60% in just the last 3 years to $65 million, and we're on track to grow it to $100 million. This, by the way, makes us a major export industry, because most of this money is, in fact, money coming from outside, primarily from Washington, coming into the region and creating jobs, as well as creating the innovations that then our businesses can use to become more competitive. Now, while I greatly applaud the mayor and the council's and the Portland Development Commission's lead in thinking up this concept of the urban renewal area for which Portland State would be a major participant, it's also true that Portland is not the only city doing things like this. Many of us have heard about the big plan that New York City has, where Mayor Bloomberg invited universities from around the world to bid on the redevelopment of Roosevelt Island, because New York clearly felt that they needed a real research university, having to get along with just places like Columbia and NYU. I think there is something for us to learn from that. There are other places in Tennessee where major state investment to benefit really the creation of new economic development around university, in Providence, Rhode Island, working with Brown University, and the granddaddy of them all, the Research Triangle in North Carolina, where you can really see the long-term effect, because that was started some 50 years ago, and it has clearly been the major engine for North Carolina and in many ways for the South as a whole. We're not just talking about things that we would do if only. This is built on things that we've been doing all along. We have been a partner in economic development in a variety of ways. Along with that framework plan, which looked at how we could grow, we developed an economic development plan that matched our expertise and our degrees and our research with the cluster industries that the Portland Development Commission developed, identified in its economic development plan. The Portland State Business Accelerator 2 years ago drew 60% of the state's venture capital, and it is fully occupied now, and one of the things I look forward to in this urban renewal area, having the funding to establish a new business accelerator, because I think there is the demand for more innovation. Our Portland Business Outreach Program works with a different kind of business. Many of the small minority-owned businesses, just over the last 3 years, our business school students have assisted 169 such companies, building on a history of doing that since the early 1990s. And in addition to that, our students spend primarily through their capstone programs, but also in many of their graduate programs, over 1.5 million hours a year volunteering across the region with many of your agencies, not-for-profit organizations, neighborhood groups, social service agencies, and so on. We have been working in partnership. We have signed partnership agreements with everybody from PGE, the county, Portland Art Museum, the metals industry, and a whole variety of other important actors in the economy of Portland. One example of this partnership that I think is very relevant to what we're discussing here today is our recently completed Academic and Student Recreation Center, which is on the Urban Plaza. Used to be the site where the old Blue Cross Blue Shield building was. Urban renewal money was used, about $4.9 million, to both acquire that site and tear down the old building. That then generated an investment by our students to tax themselves for a recreation fee to build a recreation center. But then in addition, the city became a partner with Commissioner Leonard's leadership to establish the city archives there, find a new home for the city archives, which is just an absolutely wonderful space. That allowed us, because of the matching requirements of the state, to get more state bonding that allowed us to create an extra floor that the School of Social Work could be housed in, and also the Chancellor's Office came in. Now, what is more interesting even than that $70 million project was the catalyst for American Campus Community, a private developer, to come to us and say, this is a great place, and this university now has great facilities that we would like to build a privately financed housing project for PSU students. That building, all 16 stories, 986 beds of it, is going up right now, right by the light rail turnaround, and will be open for this fall. That building, interestingly enough, will bring taxes to the public, because it will be a taxable building because it's privately owned. We own the land, but they own the building. So it'll pay $700,000, $800,000. We don't know yet. It hasn't been assessed yet in taxes. In addition to that, that company bought a site across the street where they will, once demand justifies it, do another development that will bring further taxes to the region. So it is, to me, I used to teach economic development planning. That's my field. I taught it for 15 or 20 years. It is very rare that you can trace that exactly, the effect of an urban renewal funding piece, to actually things happen. You can see it in general, but you can't always trace the decision-making in that precise a way as we've been able to do here. I think it's a very strong example. The final component, and then I'll turn it back to Patrick, of this that is fascinating is our partnership with Multnomah County. As you know, there are really three components of that partnership, although only two of them are in the intergovernmental agreement that the County Board of Commissioners approved last week. One is the building that the county will develop in about 10 years from now that will allow them to reduce lease payments that they now make on rented space, and where we will co-locate it related functions. Either it will be the research office of our Regional Research Institute, of our School of Social Work, it may be our School of Community Health, the new School of Public Health, or other related functions. This will, again, give very close proximity to functions where we already do a lot of work. The other deeper and more important partnership is that we're going to create on an annual a task force, which has high representation from the county and from PSU, where every year we will talk about the research, evaluation, and educational training needs that the county and county agencies have. then we will jointly seek funding from the feds, from the state, from foundations, wherever, to actually then implement that. And it has a kicker in it that if somehow or other we mess it up and we can't figure it out, we will conduct a certain amount of research for the county at no cost. But as I've told Chair Kogan, if we can't figure out how to do this jointly, we will really have failed as leaders. So I'm quite confident of that. In a way, more importantly, not part of the intergovernmental agreement, is that we know, a big research project from the College Board nationally that shows that for every percentage point increase in the number of people who have a four-year degree instead of just a high school degree, you reduce the public cost related to welfare dependency, health care, and, yes, the criminal justice system. So by giving Portland State the opportunity to grow and actually increase the educational level of this region, we will, in fact, avoid the kind of costs that the county, in the end, is always asked to take care of at the tail end. So I think this is very much in line with what the governor talked about just at lunch today at the meeting of the Oregon Community Foundation, that we got to learn to invest at the front end rather than fix the problems at the tail end. And let me just say one more thing related to the other question that the mayor raised. Shouldn't the state be paying for a state university? Now, I grew up in a country where tuition was $28 a year for the university when I was there. And I demonstrated in the streets of Amsterdam when the government doubled it to $56 a year. Yes, I believe the state should pay for this. And when I came to Oregon 4 years ago, I thought, boy, people really here must have failed to make the case. They must have failed to make the case of how important public education is and how in the long run it brings more resources to everybody because it is better for all of us. After 4 years, I'm a humbler man. I know that making the case alone is not enough. And as the president of the university, of the largest university of Oregon, I cannot just sit back and say, I will wait for the state government to see the light and make the investments that are necessary. We as a region should take responsibility for making sure that this region can be educated rather than pointing the fingers at others and hoping they will take care of us. We have to take care of ourselves. This is part of that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vim. So now I'm going to take a few minutes to kind of dive into some of the detail on the investments that are proposed as part of this urban renewal area to make the vision that President Veeville just talked about a reality. But first, I have to get into the topic of blight, which is a topic that this council must address, because the state statute requires that the city council must find that the proposed district is blighted as part of your...
So excuse me.
I'm sorry.
I am cognizant of Chair Kogan's schedule, and
Thank
he
you.
Said 2:40, and I have a feeling your remarks are going to take probably longer than what he's...
Let's leave time for... Yeah, let's let Chair Kogan come up, and we can finish this. Yeah,
Chair Kogan, welcome. And let's leave this slide up, and we'll get back to it. Please show the image of Chair Kogan, though. I mean, goodness. Thank you for your work on this. You've been an absolute strong advocate for coming up with something that maximizes all the benefits that can be achieved from this funding tool and minimizes all the downsides. It's a focused strategic effort, and I want to thank you for the big contributions that you made to this project, getting it to the point that it is today.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor Adams, members of council. I'm Jeff Kogan, chair of Multnomah County. I appreciate you slotting me in here. I do have a meeting. I have to appear for the Tax Supervision and Conservation Commission at 3 o'clock. So I do want to say that, as you know, in the past I've often been skeptical about the city's urban renewal efforts, and that skepticism has often stemmed from a concern about the trade-offs to other jurisdictions not being adequately considered, and urban renewal sometimes being essentially taking money that might otherwise go to social services or education and putting it into physical infrastructure. Decisions that sometimes are reasonable, sometimes not so, but need to be very carefully discussed. When Mayor Adams first introduced the proposal for a new urban renewal area almost 2 years ago, I was skeptical when I first saw the proposal. And I expressed that skepticism. And I just would like to acknowledge the extent to which Mayor Adams and PDC responded to that skepticism and changed the nature of the proposal. On the one hand, the proposal we have before you today is less than half the size of the original proposal. Even more important, the proposal now is specifically targeted and focused on a priority that I think is absolutely important for the region, which is supporting Portland State in its need to become the great university we all need in this community, both meeting our educational as well as our economic development goals. And third, for working very closely with Multnomah County. We were involved in these conversations from the beginning, and I really do feel as if our concerns have been heard, and it really matters a lot. I want to thank you for that. This particular proposal is one that I think makes an awful lot of sense, and it makes an awful lot of sense partially for the reasons I just mentioned regarding Portland State being a focus of the investment, which I really think is an important focus for our community. But I also want to speak specifically to Multnomah County and why I think this makes sense for Multnomah County. Now, you've probably heard one of the things that this urban renewal area would do is provide $19 million to Multnomah County to help build a new facility for our Department of County Human Services. This is something that is very important to Multnomah County, both because our Department of County Human Services is not in a current facility that allows it to really maximize its potential, but also because by getting into a new facility, this will significantly lower our operating costs. And what that means is that net, the impact on the county from the creation of this urban renewal area fiscally is very minor. I feel that the trade-offs overall have really been met. The county will fare well with the creation of this, and that is extremely important to me as an advocate for my government. But it's not just about the money, because it is important for us to have a new building, and it is important that that building lowers our operating costs. But in many ways, the thing that we're most excited about at Multnomah County is the broader partnership, and specifically the partnership with Portland State that President Vivelle mentioned. And that's an important partnership for us because, really, you did such a good job presenting. I'm just going to be repeating what you said, but I'm going to just do it for emphasis. On the one hand, the actual research and evaluation partnership that was identified will help Multnomah County to do a much better job of providing the programs we provide to the community. It also will, I think, make a real difference for the researchers at Portland State by providing them with very fertile ground to pursue their research. So it's a real win-win. It's also the case that to the extent that it does continue to build Portland State, we really do believe that that does help Multnomah County downstream. And it's much better for Multnomah County to have successful members of our community who do not need our services rather than have enough money to provide the services, because that's always a very impossible metric to meet. So to the extent that we can make Portland State successful, which helps make our community successful, Multnomah County really supports that. So overall, it's my belief that this is a urban renewal area that really goes a long way in addressing the concerns Multnomah County has historically had and has a targeted strategic investment focus that's good for the entire community. One of the things specifically I should mention, we have an IGA, an intergovernmental agreement. The Multnomah County Commission approved this last week. I hope that you'll be voting to approve it as well. So thank you very much for your time. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to ask them before I have to leave. But
I have a question, but maybe you could get back to me before the vote next week. My analysis shows that this $19 million, as you mentioned, for the county building, and that the county would be foregoing $67.8 million. So I'd like some more information about what you see as the operational cost savings. And then the other question, maybe for President Vivelle as well as for you, these are buildings. How are we going to fund the—I'm not sure how the students get the money for scholarships to be able to go there, or that we have the money to pay the faculty. And so I'm not seeing— at this point, and again, I'd like your advice on how is this going to provide the kind of education that those students in need.
President Vivelle address the issue about the Portland State, but I'll make sure to get you numbers, but I can just tell you broadly. The reason that this actually makes real sense for us financially is, on the one hand, actually the loss to Multnomah County is not as great as $67 million because of legislation that the city and the county partnered on two legislative sessions ago. There is now a change to urban renewal law statewide so that when urban renewal districts are successful, which this one is very likely to be based on the forecast here, money goes back to taxing jurisdictions earlier than it otherwise would. I believe the net impact on Multnomah County is more in the neighborhood of the mid-$50 million range, which is still a lot of money, but it's significantly lower than it would be but for the law that we jointly got passed in the legislature. And then in terms of its fiscal impact on Multnomah County, the $19 million allows us to lower our operating costs over the entire life of the agreement. And that really makes a significant difference. Because of the lowered operating costs, as well as the value to Multnomah County, which is not TIF dollars, but still count to us, of the research agreement we have with Portland State, which is going to be providing us a minimum of $7.5 million worth of research and evaluation to our programs, our internal analysis shows that the net impact to Multnomah County is essentially zero fiscally.
Right. If you could get me
and
those
I will
numbers,
absolutely
really
make sure to get
it.
You those numbers.
Thank you.
One other tangible, but we can't forecast it, is because of this agreement, PSU has a financial incentive to create mixed tax and non-taxable projects, whereas if they weren't a beneficiary of taxable projects, they could build out their campus in a non-taxable manner. So there's that aspect to it. We can't really quantify that, but you'll see the assumptions in the plan, as we get into more details, requires more taxable projects in the district. Otherwise, the increment isn't produced.
Mayor, can I add also a point when you finish?
Well, and then the other aspect of this that we can never quantify is that when we do economic development, when we are able to help businesses stay in business or grow business or land businesses here, those corporate income taxes flow to the state. And so they don't flow to the county directly. They do not flow to the city. We get a share of property taxes, and we get shared revenue on cigarettes and booze and stuff like that. But we are generating revenues for the state with the corporate income tax and the individual income taxes that everybody pays, including PSU employees.
Well, can I just mention one other intangible that occurs to me that I want to mention? In the past, the city and the county have frankly been at loggerheads a lot over urban renewal. And one of the things that I like about this is the fact that we were creative in coming up with something that I think works for both governments augurs well for our ability to continue to work better together and to not let differences prevent us from partnering. And I think that's intangible, but I think there's real value for the community, both in terms of the fact that we'll work better together and also because it's important for the community to know we're working better together.
So if I know Commissioner Fish wants to say something, but I actually wanted to address that point, and I just wanted to acknowledge my observation that has happened, that I have been one that has been frustrated sitting here. You may have observed over the years, even prior to you coming to the county, with what sometimes I felt like were unreasonable positions that didn't necessarily reflect the thought that you just expressed in your remarks. I was very impressed with your remarks. I'm very impressed with the bargaining position you took as an old negotiator and how you were able to leverage that into some specific benefits for, as you characterized it, your client or the people that elect you. That I'm impressed, and I want you to know that I have been watching this process unfold for a while and have grown to admire the approach you've taken very much and appreciate the work that you've done. And I do think it will pay off just exactly as you've said. A lot of what we don't take into account in urban renewal districts that the mayor just touched on in terms of corporate taxes, but I think he also forgot business license fees and business income taxes, which do generate income for the county and the city when we have new businesses sprout up. And a lot of what we take into account in terms of urban renewal areas does not include that dynamic, you know, new employees. And some of what I'm saying now probably would be better said for when I vote. But I wanted you to particularly know that I'm glad you made the observation that you did about the public watching us and can we work together. And you've demonstrated that we can, and you've done an outstanding job at it. Thank you.
I apologize, Mr. Chair. We know you have to leave, but you had a question for him.
I don't want to get in the middle of this love fest. But I had another. The unreasonable positions, of course, my colleague was referring to were those of Commissioner Saltzman and Fritz, not you. Jeff, I wanted to observe that this notion of what's the value to us and what's the value to you strikes me as more art than science. And I appreciate that in response to Commissioner Fritz's question, you're going to quantify this. But an example is the county and the city have shared policy goals around housing. And under the leadership of you and Commissioner Kafori and Tracy Manning on our team, we don't spend as much time observing formalities about certain lines. We try to pool our resources to house people in distress. And so I would just note that if this district's successful and we're able to invest the 30% for housing consistent with the strategic plan the city has, that in effect serves both jurisdictions. And so that's why I say it's more art than science as we do this.
That's
abacus.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
Again, really appreciate it. If I could have your indulgence and ask Dave Williams from Portland Public Schools to come up. He has to leave in 7 minutes.
Okay.
So if you could just stay there. While he's taking his seat, we had an evaluation committee that was impaneled for 2 years that included representation from up and down the west side of the Willamette River, included David Wine, school board member when he started. That's how long the process was. And the evaluation committee recommended what's before the city council unanimously with one abstention from the neighborhood because they hadn't taken it up. And then the Portland Planning and Sustainability Commission, that includes the superintendent from Park Rose School District, unanimously recommended this as well. Mr. Williams.
Thank you, Mayor Adams. Members of the commission, David Williams with Portland Public Schools. Not to echo a lot of the comments that have already been made, but just to lend our support to this proposal before the city, really applauding the effort of the mayor and the PDC to really pair this back to a very modest approach that is targeted and productive for all of our partners and all of our interests. And I'm really just here to answer questions that you may have about potential impact of the district or lack thereof, and again, just to lend support to the proposal.
Why, what a softball.
Is there somebody else going to be here to talk about Lincoln High School in specifically?
No, I'm happy to address that.
Thank you. So on the list of Portland Public Schools facilities needs, how high is Lincoln High School?
Well, before I answer that, not as high as Rosa Parks Elementary in the New Columbia, which was our first urban renewal school, joint project, development project, and then not higher than Jefferson High School, which is in an urban renewal district, and we just added Roosevelt High School into the interstate urban renewal area. So the challenge has been, as we all know, with the Jefferson, the interstate urban renewal area, it hasn't had resources until recently, and again, we just added Roosevelt. So this is appropriately, because it's in a more affluent neighborhood than most or other neighborhoods, this appropriately has not been our first, second, third. It is our fourth opportunity to partner on facilities with urban renewal and Portland Public Schools.
Can I just clarify one thing, Mayor?
That
if you expanded the lens, you would have to include, for example, Buckman Field,
where we
brought $1.8 million to the table to provide for two world-class sports fields for Benson and lots of other projects involving gardens, fields, and facilities. So I think you'd have to even give yourself credit for more than just what you just described.
Thank you for letting us. And your answer is, sir?
So, excellent question. I think, as has been pointed out, there are plenty of opportunities to partner. I think there, for the school district, as evidenced by the work we have done and are doing going forward with our long-range facilities plan, the need is not limited to any one place in the district. Having not made significant facilities improvements really in 30-plus years, the district is attempting to find ways to tackle the very significant unmet facilities needs. This happens to be a place-based nexus of opportunity to include the Lincoln site within the parameters of the proposed urban renewal district, and the mayor and the PDC included it at our request, given its proximate location to the proposal. Lincoln has very significant facilities needs. It is not built to meet the demand that will continue to grow at Lincoln High School. That being said, the amounts that are, for lack of a better term, earmarked in here for the Lincoln site roughly $10 million, will not build a new Lincoln High School. They will not redevelop a Lincoln High School. They will assist in planning, maybe site development, transportation infrastructure, access issues. A Lincoln High School redevelopment, by most estimates, will run between $80 and $100 million and will be included at some point in a bond proposal that goes to the voters, and that's how we will redevelop that site.
So that's my next question. Why wasn't it in the May 2011 proposal, the bond measure?
So as to why it wasn't included in the previous proposal, I think that's an appropriate question for our board. Obviously, we went through a broad process to try to develop that proposal. The voters saw, for whatever reason, to turn that back, and I know the district is actively engaged in redeveloping another proposal. I can't at this point speak to whether or not Lincoln will or will not be in a subsequent proposal.
Okay. If I may, I know just you have to go, but I want to just get to my last question, which is the same that I asked President Vivel. We don't know how we're going to fund the teachers to be in a new facility. Why would we do the building before the teachers?
We're not.
Well, for as far as an ongoing fix, we are.
No, we're not. This is a one-time opportunity over 20 years to provide resources that will be focused on redeveloping a site that has more private sector potential for private investment, just because of where it happens to be located. But that is a you got to have a plan in order, and you got to go through a process with the neighborhood, and you've got to look at all the market challenges and opportunities. But that's years out.
So if I may, school funding in Oregon is a very well-known problem, and it is not one that the district shirks away from. We are actively looking to all partners to find ways to solve both short-term and long-term operating financial parameters of the district. We are working with our legislative partners to try to bring proposals to future sessions that that help Portland Public Schools and that help school districts all over the state. Perhaps President Vivel could have it's at least a 200-level, if not a 300-level course, seminar on school funding and its interplay with urban renewal, because it is certainly complex, to say the very least.
600-level course.
that is for sure. And I know there have been lots of questions about.
I think there's a danger in overcomplicating that. I think Commissioner Fritz's question is an excellent question and one that many parents are asking, and many citizens are asking. And I think to suggest it's that complicated misses a huge opportunity to explain what I think is a fairly straightforward answer. And the answer for me, and the reason I wouldn't be in that position, probably has more to do with my experience, having been in the legislature for nearly 10 years in both the Senate and the House and grappling with these issues. So when Measure 5 passed in 1990, it shifted the major funding source of local schools to the legislature because it limited the amount of local property taxes to $5 a thousand. That's no longer anywhere, as I'm know you all understand, anywhere near adequate to fund local schools. It used to be the way we funded schools. The state has the responsibility under the Constitution of the state of Oregon to fund schools. So it had to pick up the ball. And where did it get the money from? From the general fund, which is primarily fed by income taxes. Income taxes aren't generated in recessions, one that we're in right now. Income taxes are not generated when the business climate is poor, which by most accounts it is right now in this state. This urban renewal area, and what I would say to people who are wondering why we could be thinking of rebuilding Lincoln High School and investing in Portland State when we're talking about laying off teachers, this kind of an investment actually attracts business income, actually creates jobs in the process of building these capital projects, actually generates income to the state general fund that the legislature then has the ability to give back to the school districts to fund them to the level so we have teachers to occupy the buildings. We may not like how we fund schools in Oregon, but what I just described is exactly how we fund schools in Oregon. It's not the way I would design a school funding system, but it is exactly the way it's prescribed under the state constitution and state statute right now. So if we want to actually invest more in schools, we have to do exactly what we are planning to do here with this urban renewal area: generate jobs, generate income tax, generate sustainable businesses that are paying income tax to the state that they can send back to us that we can hire teachers with.
You know, thank you. You absolutely stole exactly where I was going. I apologize if I seem to minimize the issue by overcomplicating it, but that's absolutely the case. The school district has severely limited authority to raise and keep funds locally. In fact, the vast majority of our permanent rate property tax collections are redistributed statewide through this state funding equalization formula. The nice thing about new urban renewal districts such as this one is it does not divert any of our local option levy resources or the so-called gap bond levy that we have. Those are monies that are raised and kept locally in the school district. And that's another reason why the interplay of funding doesn't affect us the same way with a brand new urban renewal district.
I hope folks heard what he just said as you prepare your testimony. Thank you, sir. We'll continue with the presentation.
I'll try and wrap it up quickly. I did want to jump into the topic of blight. Really, there are three indicators of blight from the statute that matter for this district. They are the underutilization of property. There's the conditions of the building stock, and then the condition of the rights of way. And the main one I want to talk about is really the underutilization of property in the district. The slide that's up there now depicts that. The one way to measure this is something called an improvement to land value ratio. Anything under 2.5 to 1 is considered to be underutilized. And so anything on this map that you're looking at that's not red, so working your way up from yellows to various shades of orange, those are all underutilized properties in the district by this definition. And like I said, nearly 50% of the tax lots in the district are meet this standard. If you're walking around the district, you can see this in another way. We have over 10 acres of property within this district that are either surface parking lots or vacant, and then we a number of other lots. I think we can all see through our own eyes that are low density, 1 to 2 story uses, such as motels. It really is one of the lowest density, underutilized parts of downtown. But you kind of have to really look at the building stock and the properties to really pay attention to this. On the other two indicators. You know, in the building condition, 65% of the buildings that are owned or leased by PSU were built prior to 1978, which indicates the presence of lead and asbestos, which makes these buildings unfit for their intended purpose and constituting blight under the statute as well. And then we also have over 25% of the street segments within the district are deficient, which once again it adds to the definition of blight. So the combination of these three factors, but primarily the stagnant, unproductive condition of the land, really does result in the area being considered blighted in the according to the statute's definition. And once again, I went through this because it's important for council to be able to consider this information. I will not go into that graph just yet. I just want to talk really quickly about the investment objectives for the district, and we really have five different categories of investment objectives in addition to the money that is targeted for the 30% set aside, the affordable housing set aside, as well as money that would flow to the county's project. But we have partnerships to develop a 21st century workforce. Really, those are projects that really benefit PSU's educational mission. Urban innovation is really a category of projects that involve furthering our leadership in green development, and PSU has been a leader in that as well. The third category is research and technology commercialization, kind of at the heart of the economic development mission of this district, working with PSU and the private sector to build out both the research and commercialization capabilities of the district. The fourth categories are on entrepreneurship. We believe we then have the opportunity, based on the growth and the innovation capacity at the university, to generate a lot of startup business activity, and we would like dollars to support that as well. And then the last category is for our cluster industries, the four industries that President Vivo mentioned in his remarks, but the industries that we believe offer the highest growth potential in terms of job creation for the region. And we believe, once again, that the increased activity around the university will lead to growth in those industries in this district. I've I've kind of walked through some of the research and technology commercialization activities. I just want to say that there is, the mayor mentioned this, there is, in addition to the university needing to build out its own research space, there is a substantial need for private sector space. And so, so when you think about the taxable versus non-taxable aspects of this district, this is one of the areas where we see the most potential for mixed-use development. A property or a building doesn't have to be 100% taxable or non-taxable. You can have different uses in the same facility, and those can generate taxes. Some can generate taxes and not. So we really think that this is in some respects, an evolution of the model of how we do urban renewal and how we invest in projects, not thinking about it as one or the other. So that's really the end of our presentation. I did want to reinforce what the mayor has mentioned. This process has been going on for roughly 3 years. The first part of that process, which was the meetings of the Central City URA Committee, they had 14 different meetings. And then after that process and before we got into the public hearings that we've seen in April and May, there were another 14 meetings open to the public around this topic. And then, of course, we've had meetings of the Planning and Sustainability Commission, the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners, the PDC Board met as well. The Central City URA Committee came back together and voted on this proposal. And now we're here, obviously, at another public hearing. So every URA goes through a different public participation process. They all have their own unique course. We believe that this one has had extensive outreach and discussion involving a variety of different stakeholders throughout the life of the conversation. So with that, we're certainly happy to answer any questions, but I know there are also a number of folks who are signed up to testify as well. So thank
you'll,
you.
You'll stick around?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. President, thank you again for your work on this. The economic development strategy that you've produced consistent with the regional and city economic development strategies was a key input for the, you saw that proposed list, that proposed budget, a key input, so appreciate that. That's the first time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's see, Alex Yoder, Sandra Shotwell, Brian Newman. Welcome.
Hi.
Glad you're here. Alex, do you want to go first?
Sure, absolutely. My name is Alex Yoder. For reference, I was a graduate of Alameda Grade School and Grant High School since we were talking about local school support.
You had that very look of intelligence radiating around.
He's a graduate of Grant High School. What year?
Coincidentally. 83 was when I graduated.
Yours was 23? 1928?
Something like that, yeah.
Well, he was probably there at its peak.
Can you push the button for me? All right. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah. I'm the CEO of WebTrends, which is a local software company that's privately owned. We employ about 400 people worldwide with roughly 225 people here in downtown Portland. I've been asked to testify on behalf of this initiative. What I can provide you is the background of my expertise in terms of where I believe the value lies. Certainly, I think Portland is under-supported in terms of outside investment and venture capital and other types of private investment. It appears to me that the majority of jobs created in this region are primarily driven by companies that are smaller in terms of size and stature. And I know being in the technology industry in general and in our space that there is absolutely massive tension right now in the job market. Whereas somebody mentioned earlier, you know, we're in the middle of a recession, I can absolutely guarantee that the tech market in general, especially along the West Coast, wages are accelerating at a rapid pace. And what that brings me full circle to discuss is I think there will be a growing demand for urban universities and research centers, primarily because there, as the economy evolves in our country, I think that more and more jobs are going to have to be created, focused around technology, close to the urban centers where a lot of the large employers are, and ultimately driving greater job growth, education among the workforce, and a higher educated and higher paid workforce. And organizations like myself, or like WebTrends, excuse me, along with others, are constantly looking for places where we can locate ourselves and partner with educational institutions so that we can be the first to hire them outside of college or the university system. I've seen examples, for instance, of similar propositions in the state of Utah, where I believe venture capital investment grew within 1 year by about 54% as a result of this type of a regional investment. And I can tell you, coincident with that, that the state of Utah, as an example, is actively recruiting tech companies to relocate to that state with different types of economic and tax incentives. We've been the subject of that and obviously don't have an interest or desire to do so, but I think that there is a growing and impending risk for the city of Portland not to leverage pre-existing infrastructure and facility like Portland State to drive more intensive research and education.
Thank you, sir. And WebTrends has been a key contributor to a lot of things over the past 3.5 years, but I want to highlight the economic development strategy and the software and digital
Absolutely.
Development piece of that. Thank you for your continued support.
Thank you.
Hi, welcome.
Hi, I'm Sandy Shotwell with Design Medics, and I want to thank the commissioners for your good work on many issues, but including looking at this seriously. But I specifically want to thank Mayor Adams and Commissioner Fritz for your starring role in informing voters in an entertaining way at the recent Candidates Gone Wild events. And yeah. Commissioner Fritz, I think you totally upstaged Storm Large. So yeah. Just for the record.
Wow.
Carla, can we download that and show everyone in the chamber?
Design Medics, I think I'm here to show an example of what can happen, what great things can happen based on Portland State University, its technology, its good people. We're a biotech company. We develop drugs that overcome drug resistance, which is the scourge that has taken a number of very effective drugs out of commission, no longer useful because the infectious agent has learned to get around them. We focus on overcoming that drug resistance, and we've taken a drug that was initially, the concept came from the chemistry laboratories at Portland State University, David Payton's laboratory, and we have hired people from Portland State University and graduates of the university, and we're developing, we have a lead compound that is for treatment of malaria, so it will have international reach. We also are, in a sense, a traded sector. We don't expect to sell a product for years, but we already have brought several million dollars of federal funds into the state with small business grants. We provide living wage jobs. We currently have five employees. Two of them PhDs. I'm sorry, four of them PhDs. What am I saying? One of them pursuing his master's degree. We have benefited from a partnership with Portland State University in terms of getting technology employees, and we are in one of the laboratories at the Portland State University Accelerator. The lab is full. It has a waiting list. There are more companies on the waiting list than there are labs in the accelerator. We need more resources like that. We've also benefited from the local entrepreneurial environment. We received funding. We won an Angel Oregon competition. Oregon Angel Fund invested in us. Private investors have joined in. We use services from local law firms. Two law firms help us with patent issues. One law firm helps us with corporate issues. We have a local accounting firm. We're a small firm, but just an example of the kinds of things that can happen building on the very exciting research that's happening at Portland State University.
I have a question. You may be the best person to answer this question, and if not, you can defer. When we did the North Macadam Urban Renewal District, there was a lot of talk of wet labs and other facilities in South Waterfront, partnership with OHSU. Is that working, and why do we need more in partnership